Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Auckland Cricket Podcast. We are still in the grips of World Cup fever. So much going on, so little time for sleep, as Neil will expand upon later. It's a very tight, compact pod, chock full of expert information in the guise of Jamie Lloyd and Neil Ride. Welcome, gents.
Yeah, yep. Hi.
Right, so first, let's get on to the big news of the day. We are going to be topical and talk about England versus Ireland. The big upset of the World Cup after England just squeaked over sort of the Dutch in their last game. Well, no, one before, was it? They finally got bowled over by Ireland. What a performance by the man with disgustingly pink hair, Kevin O'Brien. You watched every ball of it, I believe, Neil.
Pretty much missed the first part of the England innings, but yeah, otherwise saw it through. Got quite emotional.
Teared up a bit, did you?
Yeah, I'd love to see England lose, you know, let's be honest. So, no, it was fantastic. Oh, it came close, as probably a lot of people did, to turning it off, especially after their five down for 111. But no, glad I saw it through, obviously. It was, yeah, very good.
I read some articles where, and this was from Irish fans, saying they were going to leave as soon as O'Brien got out. They were sort of pretty much were going to give up hope if he went. And so, obviously, they didn't have to leave. But was it, I mean, 50 ball 100 sounds phenomenal in anybody's book. But was it, you know, chancy or lucky in that regard? Or he's just middling everything?
Yeah, his first 50, he was pretty much middling everything. Didn't give any chances. Yeah, just smoked it. I think his 50 came off 30 balls from memory. And yeah, I mean, by his own admission, he, you know, went out sort of with the attitude that they've got nothing to lose from there. And it showed, yeah, just showed no fear and showed no respect for anybody and just absolutely smoked it. Yeah, it was a pleasure
hard,
to watch.
Hard to argue with, I think it was 102 meter 6.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is an enormous hit.
Mm-hmm. I only saw about 3 or 4 overs on cricktime.com, streaming live, and it was during the England innings, and O'Brien actually went down like a sack of hop after twisting a knee, and I thought he was gone for the game. So when I got up the next morning and saw England had lost and Ireland had scored this ridiculous amount of runs, and then it was O'Brien who'd hit them, I just thought he must have been standing there on one leg and swinging from the hip or something. So
sounds like he was for a lot of it.
Didn't help that they dropped him when he was, okay, sure, he was on 90, but he still scored another 26 odd runs there. Yeah, so that didn't help.
Good on him though. I think it's a fantastic result. But having said that, let's get into a bit of a conversation around the whole associates and them being involved in the World Cup and the plan for the next World Cup being trimmed down to 10 and therefore no associate countries involved. What do we think of that, fellas? Good move, bad move?
I still think it's the right move for the sake of the tournament. I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about this a bit, but the tournament is horrendously long. They don't seem to want to play more than one game a night because of TV. Yeah, I think they just need to reduce the number. I think we mentioned a couple of pods ago that, you know, the associates should have a tournament like they used to prior to the World Cup proper, to see which two teams qualify through with the top 8 test playing nations, and that should be it.
Because you've got to give them, I agree, I think for every Ireland went over England, there's just, you know, 5 or 6 tonkings, which how much does that really teach a side getting flogged by 200 runs or getting bowled out for 70? Very little, I'd say. But you can't close it off completely and just say, oh, it's just for the test playing nations, thanks very much, boys, and that's the way it will be forever and ever. You've got to create something meaningful for them to actually aspire to, don't you?
Personally, I reckon a good way to do it would be 4 pools of 4, so obviously 16 teams, and so you've got your test playing nations plus, I suppose, Zimbabwe is 10, then the likes of Ireland and the Netherlands and probably Afghanistan, you know, whoever, out of the associates. So that means that any given associate team probably only plays 2 of the test playing nations, unless they progress. So there's only potential for 2 hidings, but obviously the odd upset. And then you've got your quarterfinals, but then you also have a bottom 8 competition, so your associates can go into that, and then maybe the winner gets into the Champions Trophy or something, give them something else to play for there.
It's like plate competitions,
yeah,
kind of stuff.
Because I think you've still got to have them in the World Cup, but at the same time, we can't turn it into something like the Rugby League World Cup, where you've got your top teams in one pool and then everyone else in the other. That's just ridiculous.
That's laughable stuff.
Yeah.
It's also, but you know, I don't know if you can have plate kind of competitions, though. It's what's meant to be a World Championship or World Cup. You're not playing for anything, are you? You're out and you're just playing other games. I don't know.
Sure.
The meaning behind them would be limited, I would have said.
Maybe, yeah, even just leave out the plate comp. But, yeah, so if you don't progress past the first stage, if you don't finish top 2 in that format, then you're gone. At least I suppose they've got a chance. And if, like in this case here, you know, they've beaten one of the supposed top-ranked teams, then they've got every chance of progressing. Yeah, but I think there's got to be space to have at least one or two of them in there in any competition.
I mean, if the argument is for, you know, countries' chances to develop and eventually become test-playing nations or whatever, I mean, you've only got to look at Sri Lanka and Bangladesh to a lesser extent, who have managed to come through and, you know, without necessarily, you know, really being pushed at the World Cup. I mean, I think for a couple of World Cups, Sri Lanka had to go through an associate pre-World Cup tournament to make the World Cup, and their cricket grew and they eventually became, you know, they're one of the best sides in the world now. So there's no reason why other countries can't do it. Maybe it's easy for someone who comes from a country that is a test playing nation to say this, but
of world cricket.
Yeah, one of huge powers that, you know, we can't. It's not all about just trying to develop these smaller nations. It's meant to be the elite world champions tournament, you know, and we want the elite there, and we don't just want it to end up becoming an elite / development tournament.
Yeah, it's a moot point, isn't it, how much it does to develop a country's cricket to give them, what, 3 games, or in this case 6 games every 4 years. How much does that actually do for their long-term good? Surely they should be playing regular games every season against a different test-playing nation to actually bring them on. But I guess we could go round and round in that thing. I think the biggest thing about it, though, is that they've got to come up with a format that, what, probably halves the time of the tournaments. What are we up to? 6 weeks this time, right?
6 weeks,
yeah. And I still feel like a World Cup hasn't really started. Well, not until that England versus India game, which I guess is a bit old news now, but that was a cracking game as well, 330-odd. And also brought up the wonderful bugbear of the umpire review decision again. Yeah, what did you reckon about that, boys? Just storming a teacup stuff or something more to it?
Yeah, against storming a teacup, to be honest. I think Dhoni's just bitching because, he's looking for a scapegoat, really. He's not going to blame his own players. Bowden was well within his rights to make the decision. You know, the rules are there. If Dhoni didn't know them, Strauss didn't know them either, admittedly, but, you know, that's their issue. The rules are there for everyone to see, and Bowden didn't make an incorrect decision. So, I can understand that Dhoni's a bit upset or whatever. You know, if he scored 330 or whatever and didn't win the match, he would be. But, nah, I didn't see anything wrong with it myself.
I guess it's an interesting point. I read an article that said that it was brought in, the whole 2.5 metre rule, because of players' doubts over the accuracy of the tracking system. So it's interesting that Strauss wasn't aware of that rule. He obviously wasn't one of the players that had doubts over that system. Well, but you kind of think if that's being touted as the reason for it being brought in, it must have come from players' association or associations from different countries. I don't know exactly the full story behind it, but it wasn't just an ICC imposed this is going to be the rule. It was actually attending to doubts over the, you know, total accuracy of the system, so therefore bring in some checks and balances to avoid it being totally relied upon to do everything.
I agree with everything you guys have said, really. I mean, Dhoni's made no secret of the fact that he's not a fan of the review system. India aren't at all. I think it was the first time he had asked for a review for 2 years or something like that. First time he's actually asked to review a decision, even in the matches that they've had the review system, he refuses to use it. Yeah, you know, that probably just added to his annoyance. But yeah, correct decision was made, the rules were there, they just weren't aware of it, because it's probably going to be pretty rare, a rare occasion that it actually comes up. So, storming a teacup.
All right. I actually saw just a great article on Crick Info, a lovely piss take, which was basically that India are going to dispense with umpires in their upcoming matches, because they don't believe in decision reviews and that's fallible, and they've now discovered that umpires are fallible as well, so they're just doing away with them altogether. So, excellent stuff. Let's get on to the Black Caps and their upcoming game, which is tomorrow, I believe. Is that right?
Friday, whatever that is.
That is tomorrow, yes. Sure. Or whenever you happen to be listening to this. They've got Zimbabwe, or the new spin kings of world cricket. 39 overs out of 50, apparently, against Australia were spin. And it's probably likely to be much the same against New Zealand tomorrow. And the Black Caps have apparently been training heavily with what spinners they have available and any finger spinners that they've been able to get down to the nets. And because we're so well known to be adept at playing spin, makes tomorrow's game interesting. Is it a bit of a banana skin waiting to happen for us? Not the easy win that a lot of people might think it would be.
Potentially, yeah. And I think a lot of that probably comes down to a mental thing, because, you know, really, we should smoke them. Mm. But, yeah, given that the spinners have performed well in their two games and that our batsmen haven't, yeah, we should still be all over them. But I reckon psychologically, Zimbabwe holds a bit, little bit of an edge, if anything, in that sense.
Am I right in thinking we're one of only two test-playing nations to not lose to a associate nation? Is Zimbabwe an associate now? Is that what they're officially...
No, this... I don't think they've been reclassified. They're just not playing tests.
They're just not playing tests. Okay.
Yeah.
But for myself, I think this is a banana skin waiting to happen. I heard an interesting, well, it's a very short snippet of an interview today by Brian Waddle talking to Daniel Vettori, and he asked the question, you know, you're obviously focusing a lot on the spin, you know, the Zimbabwe spin option, and you've been training back against spin all week. Is there a danger that you may be focusing on it too much? And Daniel Vettori straight away said, what else is there to focus on? Which sounds like perhaps it, I don't know, maybe he might have been taking the piss, or are they taking this game a bit too light? I don't know. I'm nervous about this New Zealand team. Nothing about them gives me the confidence that even 6 or 7 times out of 10 they should beat Zimbabwe. I mean, we simply don't know. When was the last time we played against Zimbabwe? We don't know, you know, how good these guys actually are, and
yeah,
and we're only measuring ourselves against, you know, the matches we've played over the last 6 months, and everyone has hammered us, including Bangladesh, and the only team we've beaten really is Kenya, and they're well below Zimbabwe. So how do we know where we actually stand against them?
It's a good point, actually. I mean, yeah, we used to seem to play Zimbabwe about every other season, not long ago, but now it seems like an awfully long time since we've ever faced up to them, and they've had a few guys come back into that side. I was about to say that their batting is possibly a weakness, though, apart from those top 3 or 4, maybe. But yeah, with the strength of those guys who have come back in, maybe that's not totally true. It'll be interesting. I think it will be one thing or the other, though, won't it? The batsmen will fire and we'll score 300 plus.
I actually saw this thing on Cricinfo the other day. It was really interesting. It was a bunch of stats about the current bunch of teams in the World Cup, and I think it was kind of overall batting average for the top 6, and they took all the nations in the World Cup, and we were ranked quite near the bottom of the list. And then it was bowling averages, and we were ranked near the bottom of the list. And then it was, anyway, it was all these things, and we were right down there with like the Kenyas for most of them. And the only one we were kind of in the maybe top 5 or 6 was averages for the lower order batting. So when you take all that, like, we are, you know, we are right on that tipping point of not making the quarters, even when you look at the stats. So it's, yeah, I'm pretty nervous for this game.
Okay, well, who do we think is actually going to be playing in this game? Because there's been much talk about why was Bennett preferred to Mills, why was Oram not in there, and what was Howe doing batting at 7. I didn't realise, I read today that the justification out of the Black Cap camp apparently was that Howe was included for his ability to play pace bowling in that Australian game, which is pretty odd for a man who ended up being number 7 in the order.
Yeah, that they figured that they wanted, it was kind of like that, you know, what they were doing with McCullum a few months ago. They wanted someone down the bottom to take advantage of the later power play, and they figured that Aussie's likely to bring their quicks back for the second power play or towards the end of the inning, so they wanted someone else there who could play pace well. I just think, and then I also read Vettori quoted as saying, it's no secret that batting has been, you know, something that we need to work on. But for me, if your top 6 aren't scoring the runs, you don't work on your batting by bringing in someone else. It's like, you know, it's like an admission of failure. Our top 6 can't do it. We need to bring someone else in. And then all you ended up doing was weakening the bowling attack.
Well, it really affects the balance quite heavily, doesn't it? Mm. Having what's a designated batsman there at number 7 rather than an all-rounder, somebody like Oram.
Mm.
And much as he is maligned in parts not too far from here, he does bring that extra balance, I think, which is probably necessary. I think so. You think he'll play tonight along with Mills?
Yeah, I think those two have to come back in. I mean, that's just such retarded thinking. Your top 6 aren't scoring, so you bring in a guy who can't even make that top 6 who aren't scoring, in the hope that somehow he'll make a difference
in domestic regular.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, what he got, let's say he came off and he got a 60 or 70, like, do you leave him there as specialist number 7? Like, I mean, what did they possibly hope to achieve out of that?
Hard to make much sense out of it, I have to say.
In addition to that as well, for me it'd make more sense if they'd maybe shifted Stiers and Franklin down the spot Mm. Whereas Jamie Howe, he's played all the cricket at the top of the order. Every time he has been successful, whether it be in the one days or domestic level, he's faced the new ball. He's had time to build an innings.
Mm.
Now you're shoving him in at seven. At least the likes of Stiris and Franklin and whatnot, or Oram, are used to coming in at that position.
Yeah.
Can hit it if need be from, you know, ball one. As Jamie says, you bank on your top six to score runs and leave those guys to, you know, hit some quick runs at the end. So, yeah, it's just ridiculous all around, really.
There you go. Righty, hope you're listening to that. And good luck to the Black Caps tomorrow. I'm sure that they'll play spin beautifully. Jesse Ryder will be all over it. He's been having some deep meaningfuls with Righty, apparently, about exactly what he needs to do and the rest of that top order. So hopefully they're listening to him. What else has been happening around the World Cup? Neil, you've watched just about every single second, I think, of it, I believe, possibly to the detriment of your future health and working capability. The big results, the big talking points, I guess, have been both the England games, but and the rest have been fairly business as usual stuff, haven't they?
Yeah, pretty much. I suppose the other big talking points were Malinga and Kemar Roach.
Yeah,
6 wickets each in a hat-trick. And,
yeah.
Especially Malinga's, it was just ridiculous. That those balls he bowled. Yeah, how he does that, you know, ball after ball when he wants to.
Big
Yorkers,
yeah,
right on the spot. Yeah, the Kenyan, the Obuya brothers showed a bit of grit and they batted for something like 30 overs between them, I think it was.
Mm.
Slow, but at least they hung in there and, you know, gave themselves half a chance. But
I think that makes a big difference having, because Malinga missed the first two games for Sri Lanka.
Mm.
Difference to their chances, him coming back and being fully fit?
Huge, yeah. I mean, with all due respect to Pereira, Malinga's obviously one of the better bowlers in the world, and his combination with Kulasekara and with the new ball, yeah, it's a massive advantage for them. Kulasekara was ranked number one last year at some point, I think, in one day cricket, before the left arm orthodox spinners came along and took over. But he's like Kyle Mills in that respect, as in sort of just, you know, trucks along and without anyone knowing, sort of moved his way up the rankings. And they were getting it to, you know, hoop something chronic. It was ridiculous. So having the two of them there, and then with Murali Dharan and whether it be Mendes or Herath behind them, yeah, it just has much more of a subtle look about it than with Pereira, who's essentially an all-rounder.
Does the West Indies victory, obviously it was only against Shadash.
That's who Rich goes 6-4.
Yeah.
Did it really mean anything at all, or just the Windies playing, being flat track bullies?
Yeah, effectively, yeah. I think, as Jamie mentioned in our last pod, the Dutch had this sort of, one out of the arse game against England, and the Windies aren't, you know, anything overly special. So for them to do that to the Dutch, I suppose, puts it into a bit of perspective. They played well, to be fair to them. It wasn't as if, you know, the Dutch rolled over. Kemar Roach still bowled well, and the Windies still batted very, very well to get 330 or whatever they got. Yeah, but I think that's just probably another sign, if anything, of the gulf in between associates and test playing nations, given that's probably the best associate team, or one of them, and one of the lower ranked one day teams. But
if so, Ireland would be up there with the Dutch at the moment, though, wouldn't
you? Definitely. Yep, without a doubt.
Mm.
I think the other game that's worth mentioning is Pakistan's win over Sri Lanka. I mean, I agree. I think Malinga will make a huge difference, and he probably would have made a difference in that game, but I think Pakistan's actually building quite nicely. I think over the last, you know, 6 months since the fiasco with losing those three players, they've made a lot of progress and they seem to have made a lot of smart decisions. I think installing Afridi as captain was the right decision. He seems to be galvanising his troops, and they're winning in such a way where it's not one individual kind of performance that's winning it for them. You know, guys are kind of chipping in with you know, 50s and 60s, and three or four guys in the order will get that, and then, you know, they're knocking a couple of wickets off at the top, and then Afridi and some of the other slow bowlers are coming in and doing a job. I mean, Afridi's got a bunch of wickets, but they're looking like quite a tight unit, you know, champion team rather than a team of champions kind of.
They're just about there, aren't they? Because they've already knocked over one of the big sides.
Mm.
They've probably got at least one or two more games against a minnow, so they're just about guaranteed. And I think it's a very smart move, actually, in the end, using Afridi, because he's one of those guys who always wants to be the centre of attention and just provides another point of focus if he's not the captain.
Mm.
Whereas if he is the captain, well, people are looking to him anyway. He is the centre of attention, and then he can just focus on actually doing his job as captain, I think. So I think he's probably helps him grow up and be a bit more mature about it, actually. So, yep, the dark horses, the perennial dark horses, Pakistan, doing it again. I actually sort of cast around for other exciting things to talk about for the World Cup, but it's easier said than done, I have to say. This tournament is so drawn out and so little happening, and that is of, you know, really truly remarkable nature, apart from that great Ireland win. But it did find one thing, a couple of, I have to say, pretty ludicrous assertions. Spot fixing. Are people looking for stuff, you know, where there isn't now, just because spot fixing, it's like the cool thing to pick up on? Because for those people out there who haven't caught up with it, Brad Haddon and Shane Watson, there was a hard to even call it an accusation, there's just a rumour flying about, I guess, that they were being investigated for the first 5-10 overs of the innings against Zimbabwe, wasn't it, where they were none for 20 something after 10 overs, that they had been guilty of spot fixing. And Sri Lanka, that who was it, was two of their middle order, it got out very cheaply, one of them for one, one of them for three, that they were guilty of spot fixing as well, losing that game to Pakistan.
Isn't it interesting that they get, you know, those random events seemingly get, you know, there's rumours flying around, and yet England can lose to Ireland and, you know, the biggest upset of the tournament, and no one even thinks that it could possibly be match fixing.
Well, I guess you'd have to have the whole England bowling attack up for that, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, it would be match fixing rather than spot fixing.
Yeah.
It's one of the conspiracy theories. I suppose England's played three games and the lowest total they've conceded is 292. And two of the games have been against associate teams, and against India they threw the game away. They lost the last 8 wickets for something ridiculous like.
Yeah, investigate
60
Collingwood if you're going to investigate anyone.
Indeed, yeah.
Awful shot.
And if that was Pakistan that happened to, then the media would be all over it. But yeah, because it's England. But
brings a whole new element to the game analysis, doesn't it? Teams are now not shit or chokers, guilty of spot fixing.
Yeah.
That's the next thing.
Just a matter of time before New Zealand's accused of it.
See, I think that's the biggest slap in the face, is that we're not. People are actually just going, no, they are really shit.
Yeah.
That's how they play, that we're not ever accused of doing it. Because, yeah, I mean, they'd be all over us every single game, virtually.
Yeah.
And it brings into question all our seemingly good results in the past tournaments.
Well, yeah.
Making the final of the Champions Trophy. That was, what's his chops, dropping that simple catch. Yunus Khan, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then who else have we beaten? Yeah, anyway, it doesn't
well, Chapel Hadley series, you know, 3 years ago,
yeah.
300 games, Aussie, you know. So no, it's a bit sad, really, I think, isn't it, that constantly people now just see dark forces at work when, you know, people make mistakes, people have a bad innings or have a bad spell. It's just the way cricket goes, unless you can do pinpoint the really obvious stuff like they managed to do with those Pakistani guys. Get on with the game, fellas, for goodness sake. So okay, let's just wrap up finally then the World Cup. What is coming up? We've got a couple of huge games tonight.
South Africa versus the Netherlands is on right now as we're speaking. It's the early game. After that is Canada versus Pakistan, which is
Kiwis versus Zimbabwe tomorrow. When have we got the next big clash coming up now?
South Africa, England on the weekend, I believe.
There is. You could argue Bangladesh Windies is pretty massive because they're arguably playing off the fourth position in that pool. Sri Lanka, Australia on Saturday. England, South Africa, Sunday. India, Ireland. Now that'll be interesting. If India can't beat England, but Ireland can, well, you do the math. Yeah, and then New Zealand after that has got a game on Tuesday against Pakistan. So, yeah, there's a few big ones coming up. So, obviously, the competition is starting to somewhat heat up to an extent.
And barely 17 weeks, we'll be at the quarterfinal stage.
Yep.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, let's call it a wrap on the World Cup and just move to some more local stuff. Not much happening in the way of domestic cricket because the latest round of the Plunkett Shield has actually been delayed. They made a decision based on around the Christchurch earthquake to put back the coming round, which is round 6 actually, to starting on Monday. So the Aces travelling down to Otago to play them in Dunedin. And even getting even more local, congrats to Hauk Pekaranga, who picked up the Jeffco Cup at the weekend. In a very low-scoring affair at King's College, actually. Bowled out Parnell for 102 and then did that comfortably. I think it was 3 wickets down. So, well done to them. They will go on to represent Auckland at the National Club Champs in April, which will be interesting to see how the Christchurch representatives fare at that one, because they won't have played much cricket in the preceding 4 or 5 weeks leading up to that. And of course, the Prems have just moved into top and bottom four for the major championship. Top four will be battled out between Takapuna, Suburbs, Cornwall and Hout Pack. So just for those uninitiated out there, carry your points through 1 and 2, play 3 and 4 over the space of 2 games. So Taka and Suburbs barely can't be separated, less than a point between them. Bit of a gap back to the other two, maybe 5 or 6 points, I think. So still plenty to play for. And the bottom four will be battling it out for relegation. So Papatoa and Eden Roskill in the hot seats there at the moment, with a bit of a gap up to East Coast Bays and North Shore. And in the minor championship, Parnell running away with that one. They've pretty much got their promotion in the bag there. University in second place and got a pretty good big lead as well. So they're looking like they'll be in the playoff game against, well, as it stands at the moment, Papatoa. But as I say, 2 games to go, so we will see. So if you get the chance, get out and watch some cricket this weekend, although this Saturday is not looking good for much cricket at all, I have to say, but see what comes of it. We will be back in another week telling you what 2 other games have been in progress in the World Cups in that space of time, and everything else that's been going on in the world of cricket. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you then.